All right, everyone, welcome back. Did you miss us? Good, because here we are, back for a bonus episode of the New Adjuster Podcast. Very excited to be back with you. The reason we're back today is we got a lot of user-submitted questions that we'd like to go over with today, give you some answers, hopefully give you some insight, and give you some ideas on what to do next. Obviously, this season has been a little bit slower in the hurricane season, but if you check your calendars, hurricane season doesn't end until November 30th, so we've got some time. This has happened before. It's been slow. Sometimes there's no activity at all, and we want to give you some ideas on how to navigate that, as a new adjuster. So without further ado, before we get started, I do want to ask you to go ahead and subscribe to the channel, CNC Catastrophe and National Claims. Hit the bell icon so you get notified of all future content that is coming your way. Like the video, leave us a comment. Who knows, we might have another one of this if we get a lot of user-submitted questions after this episode. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. All right, everyone, let's go ahead and jump right into it. Going to read the question and then kind of give my take, give my answer. May not be the one you're looking for, but it'll give you some insight as to what we're looking at as an insurance adjusting firm and maybe how you need to get prepared as an adjuster as well. So first question, I'm a truck driver looking to become an adjuster. And as a beginner, should I work from home starting out or should I start working in the field? Also, I don't have any construction experience. Should I maybe start with auto adjusting? Well, I think this is a very good question. So first of all, honestly, in my opinion, it's not that great to work from home. Right? Starting out, it's good to be in an office setting or out in the field where you're with, you know, peers and coworkers and maybe even other people that are new as well, because it gives you a sense of kind of what they're going through. It makes you feel more at ease. Your stress level comes down. And a lot of times when you're in that office or that field environment, there's people there that are going to help you, whether it be trainers, supervisors, managers, folks from the actual carrier, what have you. So in my opinion, it's not best to start working remotely because I feel like it can be a real burden if you're working remote and you have questions, you get nervous, and then the next thing you know is you hit the eject button. You're like, well, I can't do it, because you feel like you don't want to bother somebody with your questions and worry them because they've got their own work to do. So I think it's honestly best to go into an office or a field environment with other people for your first one. Now, also, on the no construction experience side of things, that can be overcome. You don't have to own your own construction company to gain experience. There's plenty of YouTube videos. CNC's got training videos as well that I'll get to later today. But there's plenty of training materials that you can get into as far as getting construction experience, learning about building materials, how things are made, roofs, walls, flooring, what have you. All that is out there. So don't be, discouraged by your lack of construction experience. So in your last question was, should I start out with auto adjusting? You know, I'm partial to that. I started out with auto adjusting, but it is totally different, you know, from homeowners and flood and things like that. Because again, you're talking about a vehicle and a building, you know, two different things. But auto adjusting for me really helped because it got me into kind of the lingo and the verbiage of adjusting. And I really like starting out with that. So to each their own, and hopefully, you know, you'll find the one that best suits you. All right, next question here. As a new independent adjuster, do you get deployed alone or as a crew? Now, this is an excellent question because it can be done both ways. Me personally, I started out as an individual. A lot of people start out as individuals. However, there are some people that work in teams as adjusters or crew, as you said in your question. They'll go out with a group of maybe just two people or maybe four or five people, you know, especially like in a catastrophe, hurricane, big flood, something like that. And the reason why they do that is it doesn't put all the burden on one singular adjuster, right? You can have one person scheduling all the appointments. You can have another that actually goes out and just takes photos. You can have somebody that just goes out and sketches, and maybe somebody that just writes estimates and does paperwork, the customer service side of things, all that. The only issue with working as a crew is if you have multiple people working with an individual insured, they may not know who they're speaking to all the time. They like to have that singular point of contact as opposed to talking to four or five or maybe even two people and understanding who's my adjuster, what are they doing, can create a little bit of confusion. But as a new adjuster, you can get deployed either way. Firms don't necessarily mind if you go as an individual or as a crew or as a team. So that's totally up to you because we have folks at CNC that do that both ways. All right, next question that we have here. Do you have to work for a firm for 2 years before you can get your license, and how do you get into the field? So the first part of that is not true, false, right? You don't have to work for a firm for 2 years to get your license. Anybody can get your license. Jeremiah, who's sitting behind the camera, could log on to NIPR or CIRCON or something like that. He can get an adjuster's license if that's what he wanted to do and give up, you know, the producing side or the filmography side, right? So anybody can get your license. There's not some prerequisite that you have to have worked for a firm before that. And then how do you get into the field? You just ask the question, right? You just look for the opportunity and you talk to different firms. You know, you get on people's lists, HR lists and deployment lists and things like that, and really just get your name out there. Let them know, hey, this is something I'm interested in. I'd like to work in the field, or I'd like to work in the office, things like that. Go to training classes, get your name seen and get your face seen, right, in person in those classes. All that helps you to be able to get started in this industry. All right, next question here. So with independent adjusting, how do they get contracted out? Do they work for a company such as CNC but not as an employer? How does that work? So the way I'll answer that question is, as an independent adjuster, and that's the key word there, independent, you are technically a 1099. You're not a W-2 employee. Like, now, I'm a W-2 employee, but I don't go out and adjust claims every day like an adjuster would. So you come in as a 1099, which means typically there's not any, like, insurance benefits or PTO or things like that. However, though, you are contracted out, right, to go work claims. You sign a deployment contract. Right, if you go work a big hurricane or a flood or a hailstorm, but even if you're doing daily claims, you sign a contract that basically says, you know, what you get paid, what your commission is, you know, all insurance, you know, E&O, all that kind of stuff. So it kind of gets you going in the insurance industry. But yeah, you technically work for an IA firm, but you're not employed by the IA firm. You can work for multiple IA firms at the same time. We have people that do it now. They work for CNC and a couple other really good IA firms, because there are other good ones out there. I'm not speaking ill about any of them. So, but we have plenty of adjusters that do work for us and for other IA firms at the exact same time. You just have to be careful. You don't want to overload yourself and take on too many assignments, because what ends up happening is you end up burning those bridges, right? So really what you want to do is not overload yourself. Commit to maybe one that you feel confident in, and then once you really feel good about what you're doing, then you can kind of expand out and take on other firms' work as well. All right, our next question actually came from the episode where we had our CEO, Court Fowler, on. The question was, given that the adjuster has all major Gulf Coast licenses, what are the odds a brand new adjuster gets deployed on catastrophe assignments? Of course, this is impossible to say definitively, but any insight would be helpful. And I agree with that. Nothing is definitive in this industry, right, about who gets deployed and how many claims you get. All of it is, you know, depending on the weather, right? Depending on how much claim volume comes in from that particular carrier or carriers, depending on who your IA firm is. Now, the odds a brand new adjuster gets claims, it's really dependent on the firm, right? It depends on their roster, right? Do they have enough people that they can go without new folks? Any good IA firm, in my opinion, is going to use new folks in a catastrophe. A, it's the best way to get them into the industry, because there's so many claims and there's so much volume that everything is not as scrutinized. And I feel confident in saying that everything is not as scrutinized in a hurricane, because there's just too many claims to scrub everything with a fine-tooth comb. Now, you have to do a good job. You can't just pay for a roof when it's got one shingle missing, right? Or pay for a whole fence when one slat's been busted out. You can't do that, right? But a lot of the smaller things can get passed through in a bulk type of sense. So again, in my opinion, any IA firm is going to use new adjusters, because adjusters leave the industry all the time, right? They have to replenish that with new adjusters. And if they're not bringing on and letting the new folks eat a little bit, well, then they're going to be out of adjusters eventually, right? They've got to steadily be backfilling those positions, because some people, you know, age out, or they just get out of it for lack of interest, or they take on a new career. They have to constantly be bringing in new adjusters. So new people, yes, you may not be the first one that gets called on a deployment. In fact, I'd be shocked, and that's okay, but you will get called, because if there's enough claims, it is all hands on deck. People always forget this. They say, well, you know, if a big hurricane hits CNC, I want to be on the list. Okay, great. Who's to say four other firms don't call you before we call you? and that's totally okay. If you've got work and you can go work for anybody in a hurricane or any catastrophe, go for it. We'd love for you to work for CNC. Any opportunity, though, is a great opportunity in this industry, because if you go somewhere else and you work and you learn things and you kind of perfect your craft, who's to say that in 6 months or a year you don't end up on CNC's roster and we end up using you? So adjusters do that all the time. We've had adjusters in the past where 4 years worth of hurricanes, they've only done two for us and they did two for another firm. And that's okay. It's a lot of who calls them first. Some adjusters only want to work for certain firms, and that's okay. Maybe they feel confident in the pay structure or the managerial style or the people there, and that's okay too. But again, a long-winded answer is to say new people won't be the first call, but they will get called, because any good IA firm knows that we have to give those new people opportunities because they may end up being the best people that we actually have. Next question here. After completing my license, I would like to go into staff daily auto claims, as I have a mechanical engineering background. That's impressive. What estimating software would you recommend I learn, and what companies should I target for employment? First thing I'd like to say, staff daily auto claims. Don't pigeonhole yourself, right? I understand that may be what you're exactly looking for, but sometimes you have to go a little bit out of your comfort zone. You know, you may start out as a catastrophe property adjuster, right? And it's only going to help you long term. So all I'll say there is don't pigeonhole yourself into one thing and one thing that you only want to do. I've had friends try to get into the business, and basically what they say is, I only want to do this, and I only want to go work here, and I don't want to travel this far. Well, again, you're just limiting your opportunities, right? You're not allowing yourself to grow and kind of get your feet wet and see actually what you like. You may think that staff daily auto claims is your thing. Come to find out, it may not be, but you don't know if you limit yourself. So that's all I'll say there. Mechanical engineering background, super impressive. And as an estimating software for auto, Auditex is kind of the cream of the crop, right? When I started out, it was Mitchell and Auditex, but Auditex, I'm almost certain, is kind of the number one estimating software there. And honestly, what companies should you target for employment? Any. You know, that's one thing I'll say. Any company, any firm that you can target for an opportunity or any kind of, you know, employment as an independent adjuster is a good thing. Don't limit yourself to only certain opportunities. And frankly, don't limit yourself to only certain firms, because there are plenty of good adjusting firms out there. We would love for everybody to come to CNC and work. But realistically, can everybody get claims for CNC? No. But that's why there's other firms, right? Other carriers that only work with certain firms and things like that. So yes, apply to any and all, fill out an application, get on rosters, because you can be on 10 rosters and only one may call you, and that may be the one that you end up working with long term. Happens all the time. So again, don't limit yourself on opportunities, and absolutely don't limit yourself to one or even two firms. Apply to as many as you can. Now, this next question I really like. As I was reviewing these questions, I really couldn't wait to get into this one. What advice would you give an older person, 51, getting into adjusting? First of all, you're not an older person at 51. Let me be clear about that, okay? Now, honestly, that is a lot of times when people get into adjusting, is when they're, you know, late 40s, 50, early 50s. A lot of times it's a career after a career, right? They've done something for so long and they just kind of got burnt out, or they're getting out of it. Now they'd like to try out this adjusting thing. Or they're married and their kids are grown and off to college and they just want something else, right? They want to do something different. They want to travel, right, and go do adjusting. So 51, honestly, is not considered an older person when it comes to adjusting. A lot of people get into adjusting at that age or even older. So you're not some, you know, outsider in this industry because of your age. Anybody can get into adjusting at any age, really, whether it be 20 or 50 or 65, anybody can do it. Now, are there certain limitations? You know, can you get up on a roof at 51 years old? I don't know, because I don't know you personally, but maybe you can and you feel confident, and that's great. So you can do anything that any 20-year-old can do, as long as you've got a little bit of tech savviness. You know how to work around a computer and type, and, you know, you're willing to change. That's another big thing. You know, even me, I'll be 35 next week. I feel like the older I get, the less I want to change things, right? But sometimes you have to. So as long as you're willing to adapt and change to that kind of growing environment that we're in, and you're able to physically do the job of maybe field adjusting, or hell, maybe you just want to be a desk adjuster, right? You know, you sit there, you write your letters, you issue your payments, you're doing a lot of customer service work, you're talking on the phone. Anybody can do that, right? There's no age limit on that. So again, you are not in an age where you're on the outs, right? Anybody can get into adjusting. So, and honestly, as an advice, I would leave it at that. Be willing to change, you know, be decent. I'm not saying you got to be a genius on the computer, right? But be able to, you know, work your way around a computer system and just be willing to learn. That's the biggest thing. If you think, I don't know, I really don't want to dive into that, or I don't want to spend the time it takes to learn this or master that, it's going to be more difficult for you, and that doesn't matter what your age is. Moving along here, next question. I've been in the insurance field, the medical insurance field, for approximately 25 years. I recently enrolled in an all-lines adjuster course in Florida. What's my best step to get into the business? Honestly, dive in. Have nothing holding you back, right? You get your license, you've taken the course, it's time to just go headfirst in, right? Start calling firms, start getting on lists, right? Deployment lists, HR lists, filling out applications, things that we kind of mentioned before. But also, the thing I'm a huge kind of proponent of is train, train, train. You know, learn as much as you can about adjusting. The more you know, the better off you'll be. Because when you do get deployed, all that terminology and all that, it doesn't overwhelm you. It doesn't stress you out because you've seen it, you've learned it, you've kind of conditioned your mind to know what this means and when does that come into play. Will you know everything when you get deployed? Absolutely not. There's no question about it. But as a newer adjuster, and again, you've been in the medical insurance field for a long time, so some of that, you know, terminology, verbiage may actually cross over, right? There may be some carryover there. So it's not all brand new to you, which is a good thing because it gives you a little confidence going into it. But honestly, the biggest thing and the best way to get into the business is just to go all the way in. You know, if you kind of dip your toe in the water, you may sell yourself short. You know, go all in. Talk to those firms, get in some training classes, get additional licenses if it's something you're interested in, right? But Florida, if it's your resident, obviously you have to have it first. But even if it's not your resident and you've got a different, like mine is Alabama, Florida is the next best one to have by far. Question here from Craig's episode. Do I need to get an LLC before I can start working as an independent adjuster? And if so, do I need to get all non-resident licenses under that LLC or under my own name? So I'll be the first one to say I actually called one of our HR reps before filming this podcast to get the best answer for this. So shout out to Kim. You do not need to get an LLC to work as an independent adjuster because you as the individual are the independent adjuster. Now, for tax purposes, if you want to have an LLC and all your taxes and your earnings filed under that, it's a totally separate question. And that is going to be something you're going to want to talk to the firm's accounting department about. How do they handle that? How does that work? Is that best for you? Those types of things. But honestly, the biggest answer to this question is when you say, do I need to get all non-resident licenses under the LLC or under my own name? You are actually not even able to get licenses under an LLC. Your license has to be under an individual name like Murphy Bugs or Jeremiah Long or whoever it may be. So your licenses have to be under your name, cannot be under an LLC. But an LLC for tax purposes may be something you want to do. You just really have to, you know, discuss that with the accounting department of wherever you're going to end up working, and they'll be able to kind of walk you through that question and really the answer that you're looking for. Next question, CNC training. How do I get access to that? Can you give a general update on the training program? Multiple questions about training at CNC. Really just want to get more news about it. So first thing I'll say is at CNC, we train somebody, right? Whether it's external folks or internal folks all year long. As a matter of fact, we've got Xactimate training going on this week with our internal staff on the flood side. It's changed names a bunch of times, but Simbility, CoreLogic, Cotality, I think is its newest name now. We've got that going on for our property field adjusters right now that are currently out doing, you know, working daily claims. So our training never stops. It goes year round. Again, whether we're doing our field staff or our internal staff, or prospective staff, whether it be desk or field, for training classes and things like that. So really when it comes to our training, again, although it goes on year-round all the time as an independent adjuster and maybe as a new adjuster, what you're asking is how do you get access to it, right, as a prospective adjuster? So currently right now, our CMS, or our claims management system, where all of our data is housed, is kind of going through a facelift right now. So we are kind of transitioning or moving over to a newer, fresher, more unique platform for us. And what will happen is our training platform will be directly integrated with our new CMS, again, claims management system. Whereas used to, it had its own independent website where people could access it and things like that. What we want to do now is just make it easier for our adjusters, kind of tie them both together so that way as they train, they're in one website, and as they work claims, they're in that same exact website. We're also going to have it as, you know, kind of a built-in requirement for deployment that you have to take certain classes in order to be deployed. And that's really twofold. It's good for you, right? So that's something that you've learned and you've taken and you've trained on before you get deployed. It kind of gets you ahead of the game, but it's good for us too because we know that as CNC, whenever we deploy people, we know we've got the right people deployed based on what they've learned and what we've actually taught them. So I would anticipate that happening very soon, maybe even before the end of the year, that kind of facelift that I talked about is all done and that all gets integrated. I know me personally, I've added probably 100 different articles, help articles in our new CMS and our learning platform. So, and Craig obviously has done the same as well. So that is being built up even as we speak. Probably somebody out there is adding articles and training classes to it. So good stuff. And all that is, you know, going to be obviously open to you as new prospective adjusters. Now, we do have a couple questions that got submitted here. More generic questions, maybe weren't even on a specific episode, but they got submitted by some listeners. So the first one, what should adjusters, both new and experienced, be doing when there's no hurricanes or no work? So experienced people know about this, right? Because not every year does a hurricane happen. Sometimes hurricanes just don't happen, right? Everything veers out north or everything kind of goes across, you know, where Mexico is. They don't make it into the Gulf, so on and so forth. Sometimes hurricane hits, or, you know, a hurricane will hit in the United States and the firm that you work for, they don't have any carriers that work in that state. That's entirely possible too, right? Obviously, your big ones are Florida, Texas, you know, really that Gulf Coast kind of stretch, New York, New Jersey. But sometimes the firm you work for doesn't, you know, they don't service any carriers in those areas, and that is possible. But as new adjusters, don't get discouraged, right? This happens, but then again, it can happen the exact other way. Last year here at CNC, we had three hurricanes in the span of about 6 weeks, and two of them hit the same city, right? So, I mean, you can get either side of kind of the, you know, the spectrum there, right? You can get years where it's super busy. You can get 1 year where there's one huge storm like we had Hurricane Irma back in 2017, and that thing lasted us 6 months, right? But then you can have years where it's a lot slower like this. But as I mentioned earlier, hurricane season doesn't end until November 30th, so we have plenty of time. I mean, today's just October 17th, you know, the day that we're filming this podcast. So we've got time. That's not to say something won't happen because it still could happen. You just have to stay prepared. You have to be on your toes. You know, basically don't let your guard down, because as soon as you do and you start planning, you know, holiday travel, right, for Thanksgiving and Christmas and things like that, before you know it, that hurricane will be in the Gulf. So you just got to stay diligent, stay prepared, you know, keep everything in line, your tools, you know, your softwares, keep them up to date. You know, there's nothing wrong with working in the meantime if you work daily claims or things like that. But again, I think my biggest thing is experienced people know about this. It happens sometimes. But as new adjusters, do not under any circumstance get discouraged, because there will always be weather. That's why there's a weather channel. Next one here. How much money do you recommend an adjuster save up before getting deployed? It's tough to say, honestly. So as new adjusters, there's certain things you just have to have up front, right? As far as licenses and equipment and things like that, especially as a field adjuster, and that's kind of what I'll speak to here. But as far as saving money up for before a deployment, you know, one thing, I give a lot of credit to CNC. They helped me out with this and other people, not just me. When I first got deployed, they gave me what's called an advance, right? So they give me an advance to kind of get me started and, you know, get me a, you know, a hotel for 2 or 3 weeks, right, until that first check came in and I could start to recoup that. And then obviously, you know, pay my advance back and things like that. So a lot of really good IA firms will offer that, you know, option for you to be able to get in advance and kind of get you started. Because look, not everybody just has, you know, extra money lying around just in case they get deployed and need to, you know, book a hotel for 2 weeks or meals or what have you. So it's hard to say, really. I don't want to necessarily put a certain amount on it because everybody's different. You know, some people can get by with, you know, the bare essentials, right? They can get by with eating, you know, I'm joking when I say this, tongue in cheek, but bread and water, you know, they can get by with that. Whereas some people, you know, they don't want to do that, or they'd like to stay somewhere a little bit nicer, you know, as a hotel or things like that. So it's hard to say, it's hard to put an exact amount on it. However, again, a lot of IA firms give you that option of, you know, providing you with an advance, right, to get you started on your first deployment. If you play your cards right, you have one deployment, you've made some money, you've saved some money, and then you'll never have that issue again moving forward, because you'll always have that little nest egg that you've built up and that you'll be ready, you know, to proceed with it on your next deployment and the next one after that. So last question today. I think this is a great question to end on, especially in a time like this, a time of really uncertainty. You know, hurricane, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? You know, things that are going to happen is it's going to flood, right? It's going to flood. It does every year. Big rain, snow melt, doesn't necessarily have to be a hurricane, right? It's going to flood somewhere every year, right? It's also going to hail, right? It's going to hail every year. There's never been 1 year, I think, in the history of time where there's been no hailstorms whatsoever. So weather is going to happen, right? Weather, pun there, as it, whether it's a hurricane or not, right? So last question, I think it's a great one to end on. After getting my home state, whatever that state might be, what state should I get license in next? I'm going to give the example like my own. Say, you know, I live in Alabama. Alabama's my home state. The big two after that are Florida and Texas. They're bigger. They have coastline, you know, so they've got the potential for hurricanes. Texas is going to get hit hail with hail every single year. It's going to flood in Texas, it seems like, because it's very dry. So a lot of, you know, quick instantaneous rain causes flood. It's just going to happen, right? But there are other states kind of in that Midwestern region as you start to get more into the hail time of year, such as like Arkansas, Oklahoma, things like that. But there's a lot of states that don't require a license. Again, I hate to keep bringing up, you know, my own personal story here, but when I first started adjusting, I had Alabama and Texas, and that was it, right? So I was really limited to what I was doing. However, my first deployment, I went to Illinois, non-licensing state. My second deployment, I went to Missouri, non-licensing state. So if you only have a couple, you might be able to get by at least for a little while, again, till you kind of make some money and you've got some extra funds to be able to purchase those licenses that'll help you get even more deployments as you go. So really, again, home state, Florida, Texas, I would really start venturing into the Midwest as it gets more into hail season. But really, as you get into the summer months and close to hurricane season, that's when I would start hitting those coastal states, such as Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, the Carolinas, things like that. And New York, I know Kelsey always mentioned it when she was on the podcast earlier this year. We've had guests mention it. New York is a huge one to get, right? Yes, you have to take a test outside of your initial test that you take for your home state, but that New York license is a golden ticket because it's so rare, so few people have it, that if you have it, that's your skip to the front of the line card right there, right? So New York is obviously one I would encourage people to get. Me personally, though, I don't know that it would be one of the first ones I get after I get my home state. So all these have been great questions. We appreciate all of our listeners submitting them. And we will take a quick break before we shut the episode down and, you know, unfortunately, the season down. But again, we appreciate all of you being here today. Okay, everybody, want to say a huge thank you again to everybody who is watching and listening to this, whether it be on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. You know, if you look for the video or just the audio form of it. Very appreciative that you're here. Obviously appreciate all of your questions. I know Jeremiah is going to, you know, he's going to post those questions and the folks that asked him so they get the recognition as well. Because again, they are the reason why this episode is possible. If you have questions that kind of spurned off of this one, leave them below. Leave them in the comments, right? Who knows? Maybe we have a second bonus episode based off new questions that we get. So again, appreciate you being here. Look forward to seeing you next time, whenever that might be, whether it's new season or another bonus episode. As always, my name is Murphy Bugs, signing off. See you later.